Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We'll be in-depth on whether the rising rents and home prices mean we're headed for a housing bubble. But first to the news of the morning and the denials coming from President Trump that he shared anything inappropriate with Russian officials. We've asked Mitchell Hamlin, law professor, former federal prosecutor, and security expert John Radson to walk us through the complexities of the news. He's with me in the studio. You are becoming a frequent guest here, and that's good. That's all good. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. That's a pleasure. It's shelter from the storm.
If you have questions about intelligence sharing, what the president is saying about this incident, John will try to tackle them. There's still a lot that we don't know. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and I'm on Twitter at CarrieMPR. John, let's fill in some of the details here for people who haven't had a chance to read it as fully, I guess, as we have. President Trump is in the Oval Office last week, and he's having a meeting with the Russian ambassador and the foreign minister. As we've gleaned from national news reporting, what does he start to say to them about this classified information? What have you gotten from the reports?
From what I read, he decided to go off script. He told those two people that he has great sources in the intelligence community, that he has great information, and he revealed that we are aware of an ISIS plot involving laptops. And from what I have seen, the only way that we would have had that information would have been from a country, what we call a liaison service, that's sharing information. They do that on conditions. And the condition was that they needed to authorize any other distribution. So this information that we had not even been shared with our allies. People are concerned. This is highly classified information. If any other official in the government had revealed this information, had gone off script, we would be talking about a criminal investigation. With the president, who has the ultimate classification authority, he can decide to do it. He's the commander in chief. It may not be wise. He's not necessarily committing a crime, but he's doing something that will make it very difficult to maintain that relationship with whatever country was providing the information. And it's going to be hard for the CIA and other parts of our intelligence community to say that we know how to take care of your secrets. Imagine how it will play out with a source that's thinking about coming to our side, a member of ISIS, a member of the KGB. Mm-hmm. How are we going to assure that person that we will protect his or her identity?
If he had been sharing this information with the president of France or some other world leader, would it be the deal that it is, or is it about Russia?
It's in part about Russia. We have in the government classifications that tell us as employees whether we're allowed to share it with anybody, or do we need to go back to the original source of the information for permission. One of the divisions is whether you're allowed to share it with foreign partners. You're right, we're going to be much more willing to share it with close allies. I think there might be concern about France. If you were talking about Britain, that's a different matter. We have a special relationship there. We accept that there is an exchange back and forth that goes a long way back. It plays into the Russian narrative. We wonder what is he doing here? We have many conflicting interests around the world. And he talks about the art of the deal. Why would you give something for free to the Russians? They're going to figure out what our capabilities are, and that was a gift. I'm sure the people in the Oval Office, the Russians, were smiling, and Putin, the former KGB officer, is smiling back there. We need to be better about protecting what the intelligence community describes all the time, sources and methods.
One of the things that follows in what you've just said is we now know that after this meeting took place, White House staff started to make calls to the CIA and other intelligence agencies, presumably because
to alert them to the problem, and they started to walk things back.
So they knew there was a problem almost right away.
Almost right away. Okay. And the Washington Post story says that, they even adjusted the transcript so that the report of the meeting would not contain that sensitive information. There were people in the room that realized there was a problem, according to the reporting of the New York Times.
Call here about the people in the room, I think, from Randy in Forest Lake. Hey, Randy, what are you curious about? Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I've just been listening to this, and I am curious, who was in the room? Was McMaster in the room? You know, I work volunteer in a prison, and I always make sure I've got someone in the room with me to corroborate what happened. And if he had two former Russian spies in the room with him, and he was by himself at any time, he's very compromised. So basically, it seems to me that if there were other people in the room, and hopefully McMaster was, then the proper people could just interrogate him to see exactly what was said. So
okay.
It's not this,
John, how much does that matter about who was observing this meeting?
If it's said the information is out, and I think those Russians are sophisticated enough, if they've gotten something that's great, they're not going to make a big deal out of it. And imagine, I think there were other Americans in the meeting. I don't know that the Post identified who exactly was there, but what should they do? The president has made a mistake. If you make a big deal out of it, you will reinforce it. That may be something where you have to put your poker face on, pretend that you didn't do as much as you did, and afterward, figure out how are we going to contain this problem.
President Trump tweeted this morning, "As president, I wanted to share with Russia at an openly scheduled White House meeting, which I have the absolute right to do, facts pertaining to terrorism and airline flight safety." Again, all of this on Twitter. "Humanitarian reasons. Plus, I want Russia to greatly step up their fight against ISIS and terrorism." Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. What is that? Is that a logical and appropriate reason for sharing the kind of information that he did?
He is correct as a matter of constitutional law. He's the president. He has the ultimate executive authority. He can decide that he wants to share it. I still think a mistake was made. If he's going to share something this significantly, I think there would be some lead up to tell the Russians, I want to build a relationship with you. I'm giving you something that other presidents might not. This is to improve our relationship. As I follow it, have the sense that he went too far, and now what they're trying to do is explain it afterward. I'm sympathetic to him. He's new. He's new to the job.
Right.
He should listen and understand what is it that makes things classified. What are the concerns of the intelligence community? Let me give you a quick example. Do you think that there are CIA officers in Russia?
Yeah.
I'm not allowed as a former official to confirm or deny that. Let's assume that your approach is correct and the reporting is correct. Why do we not have an official acknowledgement? If we come out and acknowledge, that may create problems for the host country, whether it's Russia or other places. They may need this thin veneer of deniability. That's not on a really big secret, but these are some of the things that the intelligence community must do to preserve relationships. And that's somewhat counterintuitive to people that have not been there. And they think that the intelligence community is always covering up. I don't think that's the case. Sometimes we have overclassification, but we need to protect these liaison relationship sources, high-level sources, methods, techniques that other countries don't have. And these are the crown jewels for the intelligence community, whether it's the CIA or NSA.
John Radson's in the studio with us this morning, and we're talking about this news that broke late yesterday afternoon and overnight, and now President Trump tweeting about it first thing this morning. This meeting that was had in the Oval Office last week with top Russian officials and this sharing of what is highly classified intelligence information. President Trump saying he has every right to share it, and he did it for security and humanitarian reasons. John noting, indeed, he has broken no law. The president can declassify information when he decides he has to, but there's a lot of fallout and a lot of speculation about what this is going to mean for our intelligence capability. 651-227-6000 for a question on this, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR, where John Michael says, and this is more of an overall observation from Michael, it's terrifying how Republicans can stand by such a reckless president who knows nothing about national security, diplomacy, etc. First to the knows nothing about diplomacy and national security, you said a minute ago that he's new and you're sympathetic to trying to understand all the nuances of intelligence sharing. We've been hearing that he doesn't take his intelligence briefings. Wouldn't that help him start to come up to speed on understanding how to behave in these situations?
We've heard that he doesn't take the briefings in the way that they've been provided. This is an issue for the CIA. Now it's a director of national intelligence. How do we present the information in a way that's useful to the president? Some presidents are readers, and they don't want the oral briefers there. President Clinton was that kind of president. There are others that are visual. They say that Reagan wanted to have videos as a part of the briefing when he would be preparing to meet with the foreign leaders. If you recall, President Clinton didn't even want to meet the CIA director.
I didn't remember that, actually.
The joke was when there was a plane that landed on the White House lawn that it was the CIA director, James Woolsey, trying to get Clinton's attention. So it's up to the president to shape how the information comes to him from the CIA, from the rest of the intelligence community, whether he wants to be at that meeting, whether he'll have his national security advisor. That's all up to the president. Let me give you one anecdote that I think will be useful to your listeners. There are some presidents that don't even want to know the names or the details of high-level spies we have because they're concerned that they may tip off this information to our allies or to the country where this spy is from. During the Second Gulf War, it was reported that we had a very high-level spy in the Iraqi government. W didn't want to know the details. There are some secrets that the CIA director knows that are not shared with the president. That's part of doing business, to be able to protect those sources and methods. With George Herbert Walker Bush as a former CIA director, right. I don't know the details, but I imagine he might have been more comfortable knowing some of those details about sources and methods or about a particular spy. The nightmare scenario that we don't have is imagine if Trump in the Oval Office said to Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, do you know that we have a spy in your foreign ministry?
We hope that he's not going to...
I don't have any reason to believe that, but the answer on the analysis would be the same. That would be a very bad move. There would be a political price to pay. People would talk about impeachment, but there would not be a crime that's committed. We give a lot of authority to the president.
Okay, so just to be clear here, when I asked you about the fact that he's not getting his intelligence briefings, your answer is, well, he may not be getting them in the traditional way, but you don't know whether how much information he's taking in.
That's
right. Day-to-day on intelligence.
The Washington Post story that we've been talking about says that he wants his briefings reduced to bullet points. Reagan, when he was president, said he didn't want long briefings either. He said, put it to a page. And I think that's a good practice.
So that's not all that unusual. Call here, John, from David in Minnetonka. Hi, David. What are you curious about?
Well, I'm just curious about, with all the questions about his ongoing relationships with the Russians and the campaign and everything, I just wonder if, he did it on purpose, but because he had to.
What do you think, John?
Maybe he's trying in a roundabout way to show that there's nothing. There's no story here with the Russians. He can share stuff with the Russians that may cause us concern. I don't know whether he's that devilish. If I were advising him, I would talk to him about how this looks. We have Comey that's been fired, this concern about the Russian role in the presidential election I didn't like. As somebody that's sympathetic to Trump, the picture of him with the Russian foreign minister with a big smile on his face, I don't know how they can say to themselves, this is good for the president.
I mean, it is absolutely clear that he views the Russians in a very different way than much of the intelligence community, many members of Congress, and his predecessor presidents, right? He's kind of out here on his own on the way he sees the Russians.
That's for sure. This move is probably confusing to Putin. They may say to himself, is he up to something? Why would he give us this information this readily?
When the answer might be back to Putin, he got caught up in, I mean, who knows, right? But potentially he got caught up in sharing information and maybe bragging a bit. And then Putin perhaps thinks, how do we put him in that situation again, where we get more information from him?
Yes, I look at this situation through a chess metaphor, is if somebody makes a really bad move and you think that this person is a good player, you'll study the move over and over because you'll think that there's something more to it before you take your opponent's queen. That's the advantage that the president has, is I think even when he makes mistakes, and we all make mistakes, the other side may think to themselves, there's another layer to this. And the Russians are used to double agents, triple agents. It plays into that narrative where we're never sure of what the reality is.
Call here from Nick in Faribault. Hi, Nick. What are you thinking about?
Well, kind of like the last caller, I just wanted to know, is this raising any eyebrows at all?
Hey, Nick, I'm sorry, we're losing your call. Let me grab Debbie in Plymouth. Debbie, what are you thinking about?
I'm just curious if what McMaster came out and said on the lawn afterwards, if that was false. And why would he do that?
Yeah, this is a really good question because McMaster was very careful in the way that he issued this denial. And I hear that he's going to be at the briefing room today for reporters, so he's going to get asked about that. John, what did you read between the lines of what H.R. McMaster said?
I don't have much to offer beyond what you said. He's very careful. I don't have any reason to believe that he was lying. This is important to him. If it comes out that the National Security Advisor is misrepresenting, this problem is magnified.
But you know that he specifically used the words that you've used this morning, sources and methods. I mean, it's almost like a non-denial denial. He was like, Trump didn't do this, and he didn't do this, and it leaves wide open, but he did do a lot of what's being reported in the Post.
We're coming at it from two different points to the middle. The concern, the immediate concern is, did Trump reveal a specific source? Did he reveal a specific method? We don't have anything that says that he did.
Right.
And McMaster's statement is correct. Then the question is, once you've gotten the information, can you then work backward to find out, well, where did this come from? Because we know what their
because
capabilities
are. Because the Russians might want to be doing that. Right?
For sure that they're going to do that. So do they have the ability, and that's in the area where we're not sure, do they have the ability to roll this back to figure out what country is cooperating, what technique do they have? Those are open questions, and we have to know what the Russians know. We have to know what the other sources and methods are in this jigsaw puzzle to figure out, did Trump reveal the piece or not?
I think it's important to note that while Russia has cooperated with us on some, including the deal with Iran, on some big undertakings of the United States government, they are at odds with us in Syria and in a lot of other places. I mean, President Trump talks about wanting to warm this relationship and maybe build a deeper alliance. But the way they behave day to day, we're not there yet, are we?
We're not there. We have many areas of disagreement. If we go back to the campaign, Trump said to himself that at the core, the Russians are concerned about radical Islamic movements. We are concerned, too. He said for us to put the pressure on Assad is contrary to our interests. He's looking to emphasize the overlap of interests. We have areas where we conflict. The Ukraine is an obvious one. We have areas of opportunity, and probably behind the scenes, we have areas of cooperation. This is a complicated relationship, no doubt.
Call here from Mike in Golden Valley. Hey, Mike, what are you asking about?
I'm curious about Professor Rabson's thoughts on whether there's a need for an independent special prosecutor to investigate the connections between President Trump as well as the Trump campaign and Russia. Full disclosure, I am a state legislator. I've introduced a resolution calling on Congress to appoint such a prosecutor.
Okay. Thanks for the disclosure on that. Good question, though.
Thank you, Mike. I'm not sure that we need a special prosecutor. What we need is some entity, some person or group of persons that will be independent and get to the bottom of what is going on. We have not had success all the time with independent counsel. Think of Kenneth Starr and Bill Clinton. We have had success sometimes with congressional investigations, sometimes we haven't. If we're not looking to bring criminal charges, I am more and more impressed with the idea of something like a 9/11 commission that is bipartisan with a staff. I know Mike Hurley spoke to Minnesota Public Radio a few days ago. He was a senior staffer on the 9/11 commission. He's a former CIA officer. That's something that strikes me as a good idea. And if you recall, in the 9/11 commission, it wasn't the government pushing it. It was the victims, the families of the victims that were saying we need to get to the bottom of what happened. And that report had support from both sides of the aisle, and I think it did a service to the American public to find out more about where the government did well and where it didn't do so well. We need something that comes out that people that are in the middle or people on both sides will say, I think we've gotten not to the core of what happened, but we have an idea of what happened during the election. That's important for our democracy beyond Clinton, Hillary, beyond Trump, Donald.
You know, one of the things that occurs to me about can Congress, these committees, handle this investigation now that Comey is out? I mean, there will be ever more attention and scrutiny on what happens with this Russian investigation. If there was ever a time that people have to be very careful, I would think, to be as fully investigative as they can be, it seems like it would be now. Do you know what I'm saying? Oddly, with Comey's firing, there's even more attention on making sure that this Russian investigation is as complete as it can be. Or am I being naive?
No, I think you're right on. One complication is if the people that have information, if they're worried about their criminal exposure, they're going to be cautious. They'll ask for immunity. They may not testify. If the system, if Congress or the Justice Department working with them, if we give immunity, and we've talked about immunity for Flynn, if we give them immunity, that means we can't bring charges, but that maximizes the possibility that we're going to find out what happened at open hearings. We may have the concern about classified information. You may need closed hearings on the intelligence committees to find out more of the details. But I think the American public wants to know what happened before the election. What are the connections?
A last question here, John, from John in St. Paul. Hi, John. What are you thinking about? What do you want to know?
How are you this morning?
Good.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I just had a question about why are we not questioning the validity of the Washington Post's of their anonymous and sources versus the on-the-record statements of Advisor McMaster.
John, I don't think that there is so much difference between those narratives that McMaster and the other Trump people, if they thought the reporting was false, that there wasn't a meeting, they could rebut that. That Trump didn't say anything about ISIS and laptops, they would easily rebut that. What we're talking about is the significance of it, and I think there is a lot of overlap between what the Washington Post has put forward and what McMaster has said. The Washington Post story is the first salvos in this. We'll know a lot more about what happened a week from now, a month from now, or a year from now.
John, tomorrow morning at 9, we're talking about President Trump getting ready to go abroad on this big trip to Israel and the Vatican and Saudi Arabia. Now, he's going to Israel, and there's a lot of speculation that that's where this information came from. What's he going to confront behind the scenes? I mean, we're probably not going to know a lot of details about that. But what happens when you've got this incident dogging him into his first major overseas trip?
I wonder whether, if it came from Israel, would Netanyahu scold the president? What does he gain from that? You'd think, but he doesn't want to embarrass the president. What does he gain from that? They're going to work with us down the line. They may decide. It'll be behind this. They may decide that they're not going to cooperate in the same way. Whether it was Israel or not, many countries are going to say to themselves, what about this relationship? We have a good relationship, let's say, with the CIA, but the CIA information goes to the president. And if we're reading about that in the Washington Post, we may be less willing to share information with the United States. That's bad for our national security. We need information from all sources, public sources, human sources, technical sources, and something that doesn't get talked about until a story like this is how much we rely on information that we get from other countries, some that are allies, some that are not.
John, really appreciate the insight and the guidance on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Former federal prosecutor Mitchell Hamlin, law professor John Radson, giving us some insight on this story that is broke late last night and then continues to be updated overnight. And you'll hear more about it throughout the day right here